Hello there. We're Vince and Elliot McNally.
Yes, the great-great-grandsons of map-making mogul Rand McNally.
And we'll be your hosts and tour guides on a trip across America, one small town at a time.
In the spirit of our great-great-grandfather, we're traveling the country writing the family's first almanac in over 50 years. Towns and Country, the McNally Brothers' comprehensive guide to small-town America.
Each week we'll be in a new town, and after getting to know the place and the people, we'll tell you, the listener, all there is to know.
In a show we call These Parts, a podcast putting towns on the map. Hey listeners, welcome to another episode of These Parts. You're listening to myself, Elliot McNally, and with me, as always, is my brother, friend, and traveling companion, Vince McNally. How's it going, Vince?
Action! It's going great, Elliot. I'm excited to be here, as you can tell, kind of chomping at the bit to start talking about quite the town in the Pacific Northwest. It's been a wonderful week so far.
Was your action a movie reference?
Oh, you know that it was, Elliot.
Okay. I think we're getting into this a little sooner than I expected. This is, listeners, this is going to be an amazing episode. We are in a town in the Pacific Northwest, as Vince said, a mountain town, a logging town. Vince, as many of our listeners know, Rand McNally was quite the mountaineer himself.
Yeah, it goes without saying that you can't really be a cartographer without, you know, charting the latitude, longitude, and elevation. Of course, the topography of the land that you're surveying. And that means going up and going down. And going up and going down means mountaineering.
He is unfortunately credited, allegedly, as having eaten the most crew members on his expeditions of anyone else.
I think it's a well-known fact in the mountaineering community that if you start out as sort of a trail hand or a journeyman, your chances of being consumed by the party leaders are right around 40%. So an ignominious moniker this day and age, but back then it was just common practice.
But listeners, we hope you'll be consumed with this episode. Vince, should we get this episode on track and put this town on the map?
Let's do it.
Take out your comprehensive Rand McNally U.S. wall map, unfurl it, unsheath it, in whatever form you have it, put it on the wall. But before we stick a pin in the town we're in, we're going to introduce a guest. So, listeners, we're in a town called Sumet, Washington, and you may have recognized it, Vince, from being the setting of the 1996 classic Cliffhanger 2, Over the Hill. This was a made-for-TV movie starring Dolph Lundgren. With us to discuss this and more is, I guess you would call yourself the makeup artist to the aging stars. Could you introduce yourself?
Yes, I would. My name is Atticus Simmons, and I'm from Summit, Washington.
Atticus, can you give us a background of your info? I mean, you've done makeup for so many different stars. Decades. What brought you to Sumet?
Well, I grew up here. I just couldn't leave it, you know? It's where my blood is. But I also love the makeup. I always have, ever since I was a young boy on the porch with my grandma splitting peas. Nobody knows that peas grow in Summit, Washington. They do. It's not just logging. It's peas, too. And makeup for special boys named Atticus.
Atticus, you mentioned that you were interested in makeup from a very young age, and it's brought you to dazzling heights within the Hollywood makeup community. What got you started on makeup?
I'm glad you asked. Well, one day, finding kindling to keep the wood stove going in the cold winters of the mountains of Summit, Washington, my father got a giant splinter on the cheek of his face, and the very next day, there was a funeral in town, and there's not a lot of funerals in Summit, Washington. We lived to be about 118, not bragging, just a mountain secret. Now, he had to go to the funeral, and not only go, but give the eulogy. It was my uncle. Okay, I don't want to get into it. Still kind of fresh. But he had a jagged splinter on his cheek, and I just got up and I grabbed Mama's purse with her concealer and her eyeliner, and poof, magic later, my dad did not have that splinter to the naked eye. Also, looked a little younger.
So he had the splinter still jutting out of his face.
Yeah, I didn't take it out. I did not do that. I just made it look like, wow, Papa's looking young.
Well, speaking of making people look younger, I want to talk about your career in Hollywood. As we alluded to, Sumet is the setting of Cliffhanger 2, Over the Hill, starring Dolph Lundgren. Mm-hmm. Dolph Lundgren, he's credited as always looking a little younger than he actually is.
And I take pride in that comment.
So where did your relationship with him and other stars start?
Well, I had already gone to Hollywood. I'd already worked with Monroe and a whole list of A-listers. And, you know, Sumet called. My mountain home called me back, and I had to take a break, and I was there, and I was with my family and decongesting. I already had lots of money in the bank and all that business, but the movie came to Sumet. Who knew? And Dolph came to Sumet, and they were like, well, let's not fly anybody in. We flew the whole cast. There's a master here already. And what do you know? I was like, I'm back in the biz. And I never looked back from there. That was it. Dolph and the Cliffhanger 2 made for a movie. Did not get as much play as it deserved, but, you know.
Wow, what a timeless story. The master secludes himself, retires from his craft, only for the craft to return to him in seclusion. It's a story as old as time and almost as old as Dolph Lundgren himself. I just have to commend you on the masterful work you've done across the industry, but especially on Cliffhanger 2. He truly looks like an 18-year-old man, even though he, in that film, is pushing 75.
Yeah. You know, and I don't want to get into my technique. And, you know, I do seminars and people can find me if they want to come. And I've got books and info, you know, all that. But I'm here to just talk about the love of makeup and the love of making old motherfuckers look good.
Speaking of, you resemble what looks to be a 12-year-old, but how old are you?
A lady doesn't tell.
Well, I have to say, I am just absolutely charmed, enamored, and glowing over the opportunity to catch up with you. You know, Elliot and myself are huge film buffs, huge cinephiles, and we consider ourselves sort of insider amateurs when it comes to Hollywood. So your career is one we've been following for a long time. And when we found out we were going to be in Sumet, we jumped at the chance to talk to you. So thank you again for taking the time. And you've already said a lot, but we're going to ask you a little bit more about what gets said here in Sumet.
That's true, Vince. In a segment we call Say What?
Say What? Oh, you young people.
Say What is our deep dive into the local lexicon, the lingo of a place that we're staying. These small towns sometimes have their own language, and visitors will need to know a couple of words and phrases to kind of get by.
Vince, I'm sure our listeners know that you and I are writing our family's first almanac in over 50 years, Towns and Country, the McNally Brothers' Comprehensive Guide to Small Town America. What they may not know is that we are going to be releasing another companion piece called Say What, the McNally Brothers' Comprehension Guide to Small Town America.
That's exactly right. After the prognosticated success of Chew on This, we decided to make companion pieces for many of our segments. So when you'll eventually buy Towns and Country, it'll come in a giant leather trunk on shelves, about 115 pounds, 7 volumes,
yep.
Each volume over 1,500 pages.
And we are going to be working with Google Translate to help translate portions of the internet from normal languages to small town America lingo.
That's an exciting project. Our tech guy, Rajit, he's a whiz, and he's been working around the clock to write proprietary code just for this purpose. It's cost hundreds of thousands of dollars already. We're draining the McNally coffers, but you know what? It's for a good cause.
You know, he's writing code in his own language, but we've gotten a little peek at a different kind of language this week, a language that's only spoken in Sumet, a language full of colloquialisms, full of local jargon, and who better to talk about it than Atticus?
You flatter me.
No, you flatter us, Atticus.
I'm here. I'm happy to talk about all the things that we say up here in Washington.
As we're walking around, you know, what's something that we might hear that we won't hear anywhere else?
Well, you know, Sumet, Washington is like another movie I'm going to reference, Song Catcher, about the Appalachian mm-hmm. music up in the hill people country of the South, God knows where. Now, I worked on that film, and, you know, mountain people are the hardest to make look young. That's just a fact.
Okay? Wasn't Emmy Rossum 100 years old when she was in that
107,
film?
Actually.
And you made her look about 10 years old.
Yes, she was a child when I was done with her out of my chair, okay? And that's before 8 a.m. Now, so in Songcatcher, they go in deep, and there's a whole hidden culture and language and songs from the old country of Ireland and England, and that's what it's like in Summit, Washington. So if you're walking down Main Street, oh my God, I need to get some tea in this Japa. Oh, that's a phrase, Japa. You know, you'll be walking down and, you know, you'll be like, give me some Japa or shut your Japa. That means shut the fuck up.
So Japa would be sort of like your mouth then.
Yeah, well, your mouth or anything that can make noise. You know, sometimes you're at church and your mom might be like, no japping. That's like you're clapping offbeat, you know, to the choir.
That seems like a pretty flexible word.
Yeah, well, it's loose. It's loose like the people in the Summit. There's not really a clear translation. I've done the best I can. I'm getting a little frustrated on the subject.
So something that I want to talk about is jargon related to cinema. Mm. And I mean, being in the industry as long as you have, I'm sure that you've come across phrases that are used in cinema that are maybe used in Sumet to describe things in cinema that aren't described like that anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Now, I had a real tough time, a real learning curve when I was on a big Hollywood set because, you know, in Sumet, where I started my makeup career and then moved on to Seattle and then on to Los Angeles. But in Sumet, you would say, let's get the grease on.
Now, let's get the grease on.
Now, what do you think that might mean?
Maybe you're hopping in a car and getting ready to go?
No.
Is it greasing palms? Is it like, you know, bribery?
Oh, no. You two are just so far off. Wow. Like, if you're throwing darts, you hit the bartender. That's what's going on. Okay. Let's get the grease on means makeup on the face of the actors. Huh. Okay. Mm. You know, not people a lot know, but makeup's made from grease.
Is all your makeup made from grease as well?
Only. And it's lamb intestine grease. So that's how you make people look tan again.
And there's, I mean, even though Sumet is the pee capital of the world, you don't use any natural products like that.
No. I mean, I consider lambs very natural. And,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
Back in the day, if you were a lamb shepherd, you would look just weathered. You would look like cracked up, potholed Los Angeles highway in the face, but your hands would be the hands that came out of a mother's birthing vagina. You'd have the youthful hands, and that's how they put it together. After years of gutting lambs and touching the lamb intestines, the hands, young. The face, good God.
Wow, that's fascinating. What an insight into, you know, what makes your craft. Put the grease on. That's something I'll keep my ears open for.
Mm-hmm. Well, they don't say that. You know, that's a Summit turn. So I went down to Hollywood and I was like, let's get the grease on. And whoa, if I've ever heard a record scratch. Fined. I got fined from the producer.
You did?
Yeah. Well, docked pay, you know, $25. That was a lot in 1953.
Yeah, I don't want to allude too much to how old you are, but we can edit that out later.
Yeah, please do.
That's fascinating to me, Atticus. I'm still a little curious. The world of Hollywood behind the scenes has always fascinated me. How about any lingo that you brought to Sumet from your time in Los Angeles?
That's an interesting question. You know, people that I was close to, they might pick up, or, you know, some of my language might rub off on them. But really, I had to learn that mountain talk and small townville, that's really not appreciated. You know, nobody's really listening in Los Angeles, and you throw something in there that they don't get like clapping in the jabba, then they just shut down, you know? And again, my pay was docked once for saying the grease was on, and I did not learn that lesson right quick. Yeah, it took a couple years.
And I'm sure, to Vince's point, I mean, it works vice versa. So bringing that big city jargon back to Sumet, might dock your pay. It might do something else.
Well, quite the reverse.
Really?
I mean, we kept the Jappas and keeping the grease on and flip on the six slide and, you know, all those phrases and stuff. But, you know, when I would bring in, like, big city talk, like cut or action or set, talent, camera, they really appreciate it. We don't have them words. We do now, thanks to me.
What did you call a camera before, though?
You know, the magic box.
Interesting.
That's fascinating. What did you say when you wanted to end a scene instead of cut before?
You just say, that's it, Johnny.
And then I'm assuming some people would kind of tap dance in front of the magic box with a cane.
Oh, wait. Yeah. You know, we had six tap dancers on call all the time. You know, and, you know, tap dance is just one thing that's just dying. It's just dying out. It's not as popular as it used to be.
Not in Smet, though.
No. Oh, Smet, tap dancing is a lively career.
I don't want to dance around a phrase that I've heard any longer. And it's one I read about, is that it takes place in Cliffhanger 2, Over the Hill. And apparently the director had Dolph Lundgren star in an unprecedented every single minute of the film. Even parts of the film where the bad guys were trying to plan something, Dolph Lundgren was inexplicably there in the background. And a phrase that the director would routinely use would be, I'm hungering for some Lundgren. And apparently what that meant is that he wanted Dolph in every portion of the film.
Yes. I actually, you know, this is some insider, originally said that.
Really?
Yeah. And I was talking to a close colleague of mine, Amy, another makeup artist coming from Summit. She's no longer with us. Rest in peace. But we were quite close. And I just said, I'm hungering for some Lundgren. Because, you know, I don't want to get too spicy, but I had a hunger and it was satisfied a couple times. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say. And I just said it on set and the director heard it and he says, I want that in the movie. Just like that. It was in. And me and Amy, when we'd watch the movie, you know, on TV, we were like, oh, we famous.
Because that became one of his catchphrases in the movie, too.
He would almost, something that didn't really fit into the theme of the show, he would say it himself. He would say, I'm hungering for some Lundgren, even though his character was not named Dolph Lundgren in the movie.
Yes, no. It was Gabe Walker. But he would come into the scene when he hadn't been there for a few seconds and sort of announce his presence that way.
Mm-hmm. And I had to put many wigs on him to look like a different person. You know, and we just had fun with it, okay? You know, we just had fun.
Well, I had fun with that segment. What fantastic insight, not only into Smet, but into the biz of Hollywood. I'm guessing that a couple more people out there across this great United States have questions for us, Elliot.
I guarantee they do, Vince. We should get to that in a segment we call Wouldn't You Like to Know?
Wouldn't You Like to Know is your weekly opportunity as a listener to write in with your specific requests, concerns, and questions for me, my brother, and our guest. We have time to read three on the air, and it looks like you have the first one, Elliot.
I do. This one comes from Jane in Jersey City, New Jersey. And Jane writes, Vince and Elliot, my name is Jane Stallone.
I'm intrigued.
Seems like a coincidence, but the next sentence says, no, it's not a coincidence.
Damn.
I know. I thought we were going to get off the hook on this one. She says that she's Sylvester Stallone's cousin, and although she thinks that the original Cliffhanger will always be better because it stars her cousin, she still likes the sequel for Dolph Lundgren. She says that everyone on set was so attentive of Sylvester Stallone's Italian heritage when they were filming Cliffhanger. What did the people of Smet do to be cognizant of Dolph Lundgren's Swedish heritage when they were filming the movie?
Fascinating question.
Well, not much. I mean,
really?
You know, say what you will about Smet, but we're just not very culturally sensitive or cultured. I mean, we have our own ways, our own language, our own script, and catering to Swedish people, Oriental people, they don't say that anymore, but, you know, we didn't want to tip-tap-toe over any weird liquor that Swedish people make in bathtubs. You know, like if you want moonshine, you're just going to get it the normal way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there were already, I'm assuming, enough people tip-tap-tap-dancing around the town as it was. Yeah, they didn't want to have to tap-dance anymore.
No, and, you know, they came to me. I was on hiatus. I was in a rough spot, and I came out of that crisis to do this movie and to bring it justice, and good Christ, make Dolph look a little better on screen and in my bedroom. But, sure, sure. You know, so we want, you know, I kind of set the tone to that, and you know, my people, they know who I am. I'm definitely the most famous person in Summit and looked to as a leader and was an honorary mayor. So I said, no, we ain't gonna put up Swedish flags and we ain't doing that. You know, like that was the voice of the people. And so I said, you're right.
Did Dolph feel at odds with this? Was he comfortable?
Well, he always had a big thing against Stallone and his Italian heritage, and he got the spotlight, and I'm always playing second fiddle, and it got so boring. It was like, wake up, honey. Mm-hmm. You ain't on the poster.
Mm-hmm. He always thought Stallone was way better at fiddle than he ever was.
Yeah. And he was. I heard Stallone. You know, people don't know this. You know, I'd be putting makeup on him, or he'd be in the, you know, waiting or something, and he'd just pull out a fiddle. Mm-hmm. And stop, you know, and this fiddle, you throw a stone in Summit, you're going to hit a fiddle, okay?
Mm-hmm. I did love Stallone's performance in Songcatcher, by the way.
Yeah, no, a lot of people don't know that. He was an extra. But, he was definitely there in Mountain Scene 4 and 7.
I love that. You know, Summit, the people here are proud. They do things their own way, and it's worked for them for the better part of 2 centuries. Why stop now? I'm sure Lundgren fell in line because his performance was magisterial. Well, thanks for writing in, Ms. Stallone.
Thank you.
I have the next question right here, Elliot.
Go for it, Vince.
And as you might presume, it has something to do with the movie biz.
Hmm, interesting.
This one is from Jerome in Sao Paulo, California.
Well, what does Jerome have to say about the movie biz?
Jerome writes, "Hey, Vince, Elliot, and Atticus. We all know about Cliffhanger 2 Over the Hill and its impact on the world of cinema. But another little-known flick that came out of Summit in the late 70s had a big impact on me personally. I'm talking, of course, of Deliverance."
Is he referring to the 1970s Oscar-nominated thriller Deliverance?
I believe so. He's enclosed a couple of snapshots. The snapshots show a small television playing Deliverance. So that's kind of confirmation, I guess.
Yeah, I see that there.
He goes on to write, "Please talk about how it was filmed and set in Summit. Thank you very much."
He's going to be disappointed to find out that it actually wasn't filmed or set in Summit. It was actually filmed and set in Georgia. Atticus, can you provide any background to this?
I wasn't even aware it was like on the consideration to be a location.
You were asked to do the makeup in the film?
I definitely was. Songcatcher came later, but I have a gift. I'm known in the industry, and they were like, "Mountain people, good Christ, like, let's get the master. Call up Atticus Simmons, pay whatever he asked for," which was a lot. I'm a costly fellow.
Atticus, can you clarify a kind of a rumor? Maybe it's a little living legend that I've heard about the set of Deliverance. One of the smaller parts of the antagonists was played by a crocodile that you made look like a human being.
Well, I may have signed a contract that may have not allowed me to talk about said situation, but once upon a time, there was a really good makeup artist who did that exact thing in a made-up movie called Deliver Me. Oh my goodness, okay.
Maybe I'm too presumptuous in saying that that crocodile went on to become John Voight.
Yes, yes. Once upon a time, that may or may not be true.
Okay, okay.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Say no more, Atticus. Thanks for your insight on that little rumor. And thanks for writing in, Jerome, even though you swung and you missed. Atticus, do you have the third question for us?
Yes, I do. This comes in from Linda Stevens from Pittsburgh, and she is asking, "Dear road tripping podcast delivering gentlemen."
Hey, that's us.
Yeah, where are you gonna be next?
Wow, well, we don't usually like to divulge that information until the end of the episode that we've recorded.
So, Linda, wait your fucking turn. Okay. Oh, goodness. Okay. You know, sometimes
but, Elliot, we can make an exception this week, can't we? If Linda rode all the way in from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Well, she left that out. I mean, it could be Pittsburgh anywhere, you know.
Oh, she doesn't have the state on there. That's interesting.
And I just want to say this is a poorly written email. You know, I mean, I did have to put on my reading glasses a couple times.
So then maybe we should just be as vague as she was. Let's say we're going to be in a town next week that's famous for a thing.
And it's located in a place. So stay tuned for that. Bound to be another barn burner.
So Linda, just chill out. Hold on to your hat because it's going to be a good one next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Linda.
I don't really like her tone.
No, actually. I don't. I didn't. I
don't care for the whole premise.
I'm putting off at a tizzy on a tin roof.
Mm-hmm.
That's another summer
term. That's another
saying. Yeah.
Interesting.
You know what? I'm wondering, we've heard from people around the country. I'm kind of interested what people are saying right here in Sumet, Elliot.
I'm interested too. We should do that in our new segment called He Said, She Said.
So like my brother mentioned, He Said, She Said is our brand new segment where we get into the juicy gossip that makes a town buzz. We know we're living in the social media generation, and that means people want the facts. The fun facts, the fast facts, and we're giving them to you about the who's and what's of Sumet, Washington this week.
So I think, you know, gossip is usually, to use a Sumet phrase, something that will put people in a tizzy on a tin roof.
Mm-hmm.
Atticus, I'm sure being behind the scenes, the makeup business, on the set of Cliffhanger 2, you heard a lot of gossip. I'm maybe overstepping my bounds, but I'm likening your career to a barber, someone who you feel comfortable with. Comfortable enough with to dispel information about your life and tell maybe a little too much information too.
Now that is a really good analogy. I'd take it one step further. Really therapist. Really paid advice giver. You know, that's what it is. People get into my chair and they just let go, you know, like a masseuse.
Mm-hmm.
All the tension leaves and things just start coming out the japa.
What's something that maybe Dolph Lundgren brought up on his time on the set?
Well, he liked to talk about how he was adopted a lot. It's really redundant. And
he's pretty dark, too.
It was dark. I mean, I've heard darker things, and so I wasn't that sympathetic. You know, it was like, I was adopted. Ugh. You know, Eva's adopted. Yeah, well, I can't do that kind of accent. But, you know, and he also had an eating disorder, okay? I don't want to, like, put all his cards on the table and flip it over in a rage, but he talked about that.
Well, do you think that was partially because you guys didn't do anything to provide any Swedish food in the town when he was there?
I never thought about it like that.
Just playing devil's advocate, maybe he couldn't eat anything.
Oh, he talked about how he was hungry. You know, I mean, he always, you know, had some references, and I always thought it was an eating disorder. You're blowing my mind right now. I take back what I said. Maybe he just wanted a little taste of home and couldn't keep up with the Sumet palate, which is not very high. It's not a high palate, okay? You know, I talked about splitting peas and potatoes and maybe a little coleslaw. That's it, you know?
Vince, I wish that we had like a myth cracked sound effect we could use there, because I think we got to the bottom of some stuff right then.
Well, let's not stop there, Elliot. What's the talk of the town here in Sumet? What's some of the hot gossip that you're hearing from your peers here in Sumet, Washington?
Well, right now, I mean, things really slowed down. You know, I'm really am retired. I still volunteer at the city council. I'm still an honorary mayor and all that jazz, but you know, we just live and let live. I mean, the talk in the town right now is we're re-bricking the streets.
That's the talk?
That's the talk.
Is there any juicy gossip? Yeah.
You know, well, the city commissioner 3 years ago was definitely let go and run out of town for embezzling funds. And it's not a lot of funds, but he did take it all and spend it on the poker in our neighboring casino at the Indian Reservation. But that was front page news of the Sumet Gazette, you know, which I'm a columnist on. I did write about it. You know, I broke the story.
And I've heard actually that the makeup compound you make is strong enough to be the mortar of the bricks in the streets. Is that correct?
Another thing I can't really talk about, but
I don't want to divulge any secrets.
Okay, makeup goes deep, okay? There's a lot of things that come onto makeup and making my own, like a painter. If you want to forge a masterpiece, you got to make your own paint so that a forensic scientist can't find out if this was actually made by Picasso, okay? So my makeup construction, I do it all, you know? I get down in there. I butcher the lambs. I process the intestines. And I've learned some things.
Actually, kind of opening my eyes. Elliot, remember earlier when we took a wrong turn and we were driving and we were going to drive through a tunnel that we thought were going to take us through some bluffs into cement, and we slammed into the side of the mountain because it was painted like a tunnel, but it wasn't actually a tunnel?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm starting to get call it an intuition, that this was the work of none other than Sumet's own Atticus.
You are correct. You are correct. I've been, you know, there's lots of money. There's lots of federal money for artistic pursuits. And makeup is definitely an art form. And it extends to painting. I use all of my own makeup to create illusions. And I've been commissioned to make tricky little cartoon fatal tunnels.
Well, and that tunnel did have its own scene in Cliffhanger 2 Over the Hill, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, it did. Well, again, flipping the japper, and I just talking to Amy, and we're talking about my latest project in the city of Summit in my hiatus, where I had been commissioned to paint just a jagged, nasty, abandoned well on the ground so that people would avoid it. And, you know, of course, it's all a safety insurance. Mm-hmm. So you paint the jagged well on top of an actual sinkhole so that, like, we see the well, we avoid the sinkhole. And it worked. Nobody fell down that sinkhole or the jagged well. And so I was talking about that, and Amy was like, oh, you're so good, and this and that. And I was like, oh, Amy, you silly bitch. And she was like, oh, you sassy fruit. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And then again, the director comes over, and he's like, we need an optical illusion painted to exact perfection for our set of the Cliffhanger 2. And I said, I oblige. Show me the money. I got paid for that one.
And that's what Dolph Lundgren uses to distract the villains, right? Mm-hmm. They think they're going to go through the tunnel.
Plot twist. I'm giving this... See, this is the thing. I made that movie what it is, the legend that it is. All of the catchphrases, all of the plot twists, it really came from me. I mean, that script was fucking nothing. It was nothing. I mean, I was just taking a paycheck because I needed it a little bit, you know. And who knew that I would save the movie?
Truly, it seems that you were the one pulling the puppet strings behind Cliffhanger 2 Over the Hill. Mm-hmm. Wow. Your craft, not only making people look younger, not only fighting back the hands of time, but also saving lives. Fascinating stuff. And a lot of stuff that I did not know, Elliot.
No, that was some juicy gossip. Stuff that I didn't know, Vince. I think we might have 1, 2, 3, 4, or maybe exactly 5 things that we also didn't know.
I think that's a pretty good guess, Elliot.
So let's get to those in a segment we call Did You Know?
Did You Know is our weekly rapid-fire trivia segment where we bat back and forth digestible, snackable factoids. We have time for 5 because we know that you only sometimes have time for some quick-hitting facts. And I've got the first one right here, Elliot.
Right, Vince, what is it?
Elliot and Atticus, did you know that besides being a home to the makeup magician of the stars, Sumet also has a very prominent yodeling community?
Hmm. I didn't know that, Vince.
Absolutely. Not only is it home to some champion yodelers, but also the Yodel Institute. I have to ask you, Atticus, have you ever yodeled?
I have yodeled my little voice box to bleed.
So, in addition to all your other storied talents, you're also an amateur yodeler?
Yes, and I do use the term amateur. I am not boasting about it. But in Summit, yodeling is just a way of life. My father, my mother, my sister, my uncle, even Amy, that silly bitch. We would just yodel, yodel, yodel. It's not uncommon after a nice meal to just break into a yodel. We all know it. It's the after-dinner yodel. It's we have our own term for it. It's called picnic basket singing.
I didn't know that, Vince. But did you know that although Dolph Lundgren played Stallone's role in Cliffhanger 2, they were actually able to get a couple of the original actors in the movie.
Elliot, I didn't know that. Who are you speaking of?
Actually, and Atticus, you can probably speak to this too, John Lithgow was the original villain in Cliffhanger, and he was actually able to be brought back for Cliffhanger 2, although, for some reason, his contract stipulated that he play his character Dick from Third Rock from the Sun in Cliffhanger 2.
Yes, it did. And the director, under my advisement, said no to that.
I believe John Lithgow really wanted this whole alien undertone in Cliffhanger 2. Is that correct?
Yeah, he was trying to bring in some flippity-jip, and, I just saw it for what it was, and I was like, you need to cut this out. This prima donna doesn't know, who and what he walked into, which was a makeup artist on a hiatus, okay?
And correct me if I'm wrong, but since they couldn't really come to terms on that part of the contract, he was relegated to a lesser role in the movie as the Avalanche.
And that, I advised against that, and that's where the director overrode me, and I got a little bit pissed. Mm-hmm. But then after I had slept on it, I was like, okay, let's just let the water cool, make some tea.
And Vince, just to clarify for our listeners who may have not seen the film, the Avalanche is not the name of a character. He was literally the Avalanche of the movie. He was the special effect.
And it should go without being overlooked that he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor in that role.
Best Supporting Avalanche, yeah.
Yeah, I wrote a letter to the Academy about that one. Okay. And I was, like a wrinkle on an elephant. I was really just cinched up about it.
Well, we don't want to put you in a bad mood. Let's move on. Do you have a did-you-know fact for us, Atticus?
Yes, I do. Now, if you've never visited Summit, you might not know this. Did you know that there are 4 general stores on Main Street?
Are they specific to anything, or are they all general? I mean, is it general food?
They have the exact same stock, and they're owned by the same owner. His name's Jim Dancy.
So one Jim Dancy has opened 4 identical stores within feet of each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all the same products. Mm-hmm. Exact same inventory, exact same management, but they're all different themes. We don't pride ourselves on being cultured in Summit, but this is where we get a little fancy, and it's really because of Jim, and we've honored him several times. He's got a plaque on a bench in the park, and, theme one, the first one, 274 on Main Street down at Summit is Indian-themed. India, the country, okay? Mm-hmm. It's great. Mm. You walk in there, am I in Dubai, okay? Mm-hmm. Could be. Could be.
Dubai, India, the travel destination for many. What's another one of the themes for Mr. Dancy's stores?
Turn of the century San Francisco.
Oh, wow. So they are very specific periods here.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, just that one. That one gets a little period like it, and there's railroads and all kinds of, labor violations. You don't want to work there, okay? Any of the other 3, you don't want to work there.
Wow, that's so interesting. So you can ostensibly buy the same product, but with a completely different theme, depending on which store you go to.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
And to seemingly no benefit of anyone in the town.
Well, I'm going to back up a little bit, okay? Let's get the horse on the cart and turn it around.
Another interesting phrase.
Yeah, it benefits everybody in the town. Some people will split up their grocery list and, I want a little bit of India. I want a little bit of Boogie Nights. That's the theme of the third one, So I'll get my rice and my milk in the India one. I don't really go to turn of the century San Francisco, but, I'll just jump into Boogie Nights and get a little bit of dairy, get a little bit of meat, whatever I need. I just spice it up. They're all on Main Street.
Vince, we got to check that out after we finish recording.
I think we hit all of them in a row. Let's do a marathon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Guys, I didn't know that, but did you know that when filming in Summit, you have to take some extra precautions?
Oh, what would those be, Vince?
Well, you're not allowed to catch any citizens, so I'm told, on camera or on film without their makeup on. It's considered disrespectful. Atticus, is this a trend that became legislation because of your actions?
I mean, it comes from our Amish roots. We have a little bit of tinge of that. And becoming legislation wasn't something I supported as the honorary mayor, but it's just a cultural thing, you know, and how it became the law. And it just used to be a taboo, you know, just I haven't got my makeup on and I can't take credit where credit's not due. Can't put the kiddie pool in the front lawn, as they say, but I'm on the fence about it, you know. I want definitely good faces for good photography and film like that, but yeah, I don't think the law needs to be involved, and I don't think the law needs to be involved in abortions, okay? That's just me.
I didn't realize that makeup had Amish roots.
Well, it comes from, you know, no pictures, the souls in the camera, and, you know, all that jazz that the Amish go on about, their Japas, but, a few of our founding members came from the Amish community, and, you know, their roots can be seen in our Constitution and in all of our mission statements for the town, and it's frequently quoted, and we have a few Amish members on the board of directors for the town, and, you know, Jim is an Amish person, Jim Dancy, and he's a big person around town, and that's the last store is Amishville. It's just wood.
All right.
It's just wood everywhere. Really nice cottons, blends, beards. You gotta have a beard to work at that one. And wow. No women at that one.
Oh, that goes without saying.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't know how they get around legally with that one, but...
So you're not gonna see Amy in there?
No, oh no. Amy passed away about 4 years ago, but she did work at the Boogie Nights general store. Her makeup career just didn't last as long as mine did. Bless his soul.
Well, I didn't know that, Vince, and thanks for clarifying, Atticus. Guys, did you know that although the city of Sumet didn't pay homage to Dolph Lundgren's Scandinavian heritage, they did oblige by building all the set pieces out of Lego?
That seems terribly impractical. I had no idea that was the case, Elliot.
Yeah, oh, it was, and I'm sure you can expound upon this, Atticus, is that although Lego is made to construct objects, constructing things with motors or things that people have to use or sit in, it's just not the correct building material.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm gonna have to unpack this one, all right? The budget got blown, and the producers didn't have enough money to finish or even start set building. And most of the set, as you've seen, is a natural environment, so they didn't really have to build a lot. And they had to pay me to paint that fake tunnel, okay? So when it came down to it, they just did a Lego drive in the community. And who knew? I didn't even know. I didn't have Legos. I played with Barbies, okay? Let's get that straight. And the town of Sumet really rallied, okay? And people from surrounding counties came, and it was just bring in your Legos. Mm-hmm. Big Hollywood needs to build a few rooms, a few sets. And they did. They did. And they were, you know, and I want to do a little special shout out. And she didn't even get credited in the movie. All right. Nancy Larrabee, she organized that Lego drive and she cataloged every single fucking Lego and got it back to every single fucking little kid who donated it. Okay. They all went back. There was no discrepancies. Thank you, Nancy.
Also, after the filming, they deconstructed everything, sent them all back.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite or what you thought was the most exquisite Lego set piece that was made?
I definitely do. There was a small bird feeder with a bird bath that was in the very opening scene, just sort of a panning shot. But, you know, good God, they did well. They did well on building that bird back. And it actually stayed. That was the one thing that stayed. Nancy was like, hey, you know, there's probably about 4 or 5 donors that donated to making that one happen. And they're like, you know, this is so pretty. The city of Sumet would like, can we keep these? Can we just keep this here for Sumet? It's still here. So when you're walking around Main Street, just dip down to the park, sit on the bench that's dedicated to Jim Dancy, and you'll be able to watch birds. Take like a little bird bath in the Lego bird feeder. And the city pays for bird feed that goes into that. It's all city run.
Is the feed Legos?
No. Oh.
Elliot, Tickler. You rascal.
No. I'm just going to shut my jabber, I think.
You know, it really is a gorgeous bird bath. My favorite, not to derail the conversation, Lego set piece from that film was actually Dolph Lundgren's character's wife. who was made out of Lego.
And they, at the time, it was like, how do we animatronica this? And they actually called George Lucas, who referred him to how he built R2-D2.
Very lifelike. Fascinating stuff. Thank you so much, Atticus, not only for your Did You Know facts, but for your time on this episode. It's been an absolute pleasure. You're an absolute legend. And hopefully it was as fun for you as it was for us.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it very much. You know, and I just want to part with one thing. You know, if you ever come to Summit, there's lots of fiddles around, and we welcome people to play, but every once in a while you'll find a violin, and you are most certainly not welcome to play the violins. Anybody can pick up a fiddle, and if you don't know the reason or the difference, if you can spill beer on it, that's a fiddle, okay? If you can't, it's a violin, and don't fucking touch it, okay?
And I'm assuming the highest rank you can ascend to is third fiddle, because Stallone's first, right? Dolph Lundgren's second. You can only get to third.
Yes.
Bear that in mind, listeners, for when, not if, you visit Summit. And we would like to leave you with one thing ourselves.
And we're going to do that in a segment we call Wish You Were Here.
So in a perfect world, listeners, you join us for each and every one of our journeys across this great nation. But since you can't, this is the next best thing. It's an audio postcard from us to you. Elliot, how's it go?
Goes like this, Vince. Dear listener, wish you were here in Summit, Washington.
Small, humble logging town with lofty aspirations.
In the set of the made-for-TV film Cliffhanger 2, Over the Hill, starring Dolph Lundgren.
Town that's home to a makeup artist to the stars, a legend, and a master of his craft.
In a town that is in no way general, aside from its four identical general stores.
A town where looks might be deceiving, but all of people are genuine.
In a town that we were genuinely excited and thrilled to be in.
Farewell from these parts to yours.
Hey listeners, thanks for joining us in Summit, Washington. Hope you enjoyed it. And I hope you join us again next week when we're in Southeast Cumberville, Georgia.
Southeast Cumberville, Georgia has an entire economy and industry centralized around the repurposing and recycling of peach pits. So stay tuned, it's going to be a good one.